Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Welcome. This is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going on to phase two of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. Iron Man 3, 2013, directed by Shane Black. Ho, ho, ho.
So this is the start of another segment?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The Avengers put a button in it, and this is the next series of adventures for the Avengers, independently.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, Brother Drew, you've been excited to talk about this movie since we started the Marvel movies.
Yeah, this is a fairly controversial movie. Controversial in the sense that most people hate it, but I actually really like it. That's the main controversy.
It's a different kind of movie, I think. I mean, it's the same kind of movie, but it's got a little bit of a different tone.
It tries some stuff out.
It definitely does. It tries some old stuff out.
Sure.
But we'll talk about that. And Brother Jay, this is the first time you've seen it?
Correct.
What's your initial thought?
My thought when I watched this was, you know, in a sitcom in the 80s and 90s, when the writers were struggling to make the show fresh and bring everything back to where the audiences would come back or the audiences they have would stay, and they clawed desperately at the soil to try and keep from being buried in a coffin, they would add a child into the mix because that was the new gimmick character. That's what I thought of this movie.
One of those exact children was in the Avengers, the late season child addition to, I want to say, Family Ties.
Yeah,
she was the waitress in the Avengers.
I did not know that. It turns out the kid in this movie, though, has some credentials.
I don't have any fault with him. I have a fault with the writing and the plot. So
I really enjoyed the writing.
Yeah.
And the plot.
Well, okay, so Drew, what was your first reaction when you first saw it and your reaction when you saw it most recently?
I did not like this movie the first time I saw it. I thought it did some really interesting things. I've seen it a few more times now, and I appreciate some of what Shane Black was trying to do. And I have to guess that this is not really his true vision for the movie, because you can see so much of the Shane Blackiness in the first maybe two thirds of the movie, and then the last third is just like the studio saying, "I'm tired of not having him in the suit. Get him in the suit."
Yeah.
And I imagine Shane Black was like, "Fine, fuck you. He's in all the suits."
Exactly. They solved that problem by putting all the suits out there. A question, actually, about that. So, when you saw it, did you recognize the suits from being a comic book fan? Like, the different versions of the suit?
Not specifically. I mean, in general, that was always an Iron Man thing, as he always had he had tons of suits, different suits for different specific situations. So, it was fun to see that concept here, but... Yeah, the bummer was it wasn't ever actually explored.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is that there seemed to be, like, all the suits had names. And if you look at the trivia, it says, well, this suit he would have worn, except it got, intercepted by blah, blah, blah. And then you got this suit and this suit and this suit. And it's like, okay, you got all that information from the comic books or something else. Nobody watching this movie, unless you keep track of like the weird nicknames Tony Stark gave to the suits, but he didn't even do it. I don't know. It just seemed that was a weird part of it. I actually did not expect that coming. There are a couple of things that actually surprised me about this movie. One of the things I actually texted you about, Drew.
How much of this movie is canon?
Well, it's all canon for the movie universe.
But in comparison to the comic books.
Well, the Mandarin is a completely reimagined character.
It's Jason, have you seen Doctor Strange?
Which one's Doctor Strange?
Benedict Cumberbatch.
And
Tilda Swinton.
Crazy Woman? Yes, yeah. I've seen
Okay, that. All right. Because she played the Mandarin in Doctor Strange.
She did not.
Did she not? I thought she was the Mandarin in Doctor Strange.
That where you were talking about?
Yeah. Who was no, she in Doctor Strange?
She's the ancient one.
Oh, the ancient one. Okay. I got him confused. I'm sorry. I apologize.
The other part of this movie is taken from a comic book arc that happened after I stopped reading comic books. So I'm not as familiar with that. But I liked all the PTSD stuff. I liked that he did spend a significant amount of time in this movie outside of his suit. I thought that was a fun, creative choice.
I think that was the choice. That was, and I think he wanted to end it with the line, "I am Tony Stark." But the studio said, "No, you have to end it with I am Iron Man."
That's dumb.
Yeah.
The last half hour of this movie doesn't make any sense.
It's got some issues, but it probably looked great in the theater. I don't know. We'll never know. We'll never see a movie in a theater again. Oh, well. Remember when we had theaters?
No.
Yeah. So shall we dive right in?
We probably should.
Yeah. By the way, I saw the movie for the first time last night. And same. Yeah, there were some things that surprised me. First of all, I thought that Ben Kingsley was an odd choice to be Tilda Swinton. Now that I'm disabused of that whole thing.
I was really upset when it was Ben Kingsley at first until the reveal, and then I felt much better.
Okay, the reveal is great.
Yes.
The reveal is so good.
Ben Kingsley is so funny.
He is. Ben Kingsley as Ringo Starr. I mean, just the best.
Yeah, and Jason, I'm assuming you don't know anything about the Mandarin.
No.
So in the comic books, he was created as sort of the anti-Iron Man. So Iron Man was all about using technology. And the Mandarin was a character that used magic. He had these 10 magic rings that each had a different magical property. So, you know, it was magic versus science was the theme there, which is great, except the Mandarin was a super racist Asian stereotype.
Imagine that.
Yeah, because it was from the, you know, the 60s. So hearing that they were going to have the Mandarin in this movie, that was a real head scratcher. It's like, there's no way they can do that today.
Why did they keep the name?
I think to have the reveal.
But what was the point of the name?
He is one of Iron Man's like oldest and most dangerous nemeses.
Yeah, but the name doesn't have any meaning at this point.
It has a lot of meaning to the comic book fans.
But again, this wasn't very canonical. So,
well, they did try to do a lot of fan service. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know about apparently the Shane Black original cut of this movie is 3 hours and 15 minutes long.
I would love to see that movie.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see where they went.
I bet we'd have another hour of Harley.
Yeah, maybe. God knows. Well, okay. So, the movie opens with Tony Stark narrating a story about how we create our own demons. And we flash back to New Year's Eve 1999. Eiffel 65 is very popular. They are blue. Dabba-dee-dabba-da. Which, by the way, It made me smile because, again, I was really into that kind of music in the years 1999 through 2001.
Yes, I have some homemade CDs from you that will prove that.
Ah, it's great. So, and we get Hap or Happy with his mullet. Just fun.
He looked amazing.
Yeah, he did. And we see Tony, who meets a botanical scientist named Maya Hansen, played by Rebecca Hall, who we know from The Town, The Prestige, Professor Marsden and the Wonder Woman, and Frost Nixon in Bern, Switzerland. And he arrogantly avoids crippled, nerdy scientist Aldridge Killian. Played, I did not recognize him as Guy Pearce at first. Like when he was, when he played like Garth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he wants Tony's backing in his endeavor, the AIM project, Advanced Idea Mechanics. And turns out Maya has an experimental plant. So there's a whole scene about where Tabby gets blown up by a plant. And anyway, there's some sort of, I don't know. It's a whole weird thing between Maya and Tony. I mean, not weird for him. He's a love him, leave him kind of guy. And of course, he has he's grown up in the years since 1999.
She was originally written as the villain of the movie.
Yeah, I was wondering why she wasn't the villain of the movie. Like,
the studio did not like having a lady villain.
That's crap. But it is crap because she needed to be the villain, because at the end, her character is very unsatisfying.
Yeah, her turn at the very end made no sense.
No, because she turned right back. Like, you can't have
a double turn. That's what I mean. The final turn, the turn back, made no sense.
Yeah. We go to December 2012, and it's been a bit since the events of
New York City. I haven't heard what Jason thought of this opening, this amazing opening with the awesome prosthetics on Guy Pearce.
What I wrote down in my notes... Oh, look, Guy Pearce is just a poor photocopy of Val Kilmer.
I thought about Val Kilmer, too. And actually, yes, because this movie has, it's all Lethal Weapon and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yes.
Yes. And a little bit of the what is it, The Good Guys.
I've never seen The Good Guys, but I hear it's good.
It is?
Yeah.
The whole shtick irritated me, so...
Which shtick?
The entire opening shtick. The whole flashback sequence was annoying.
He's basically the same character as Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, right?
Yeah.
Like narrating and everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And getting all He's the best hairy. Lines.
Yeah.
Except that, you know, we didn't get to witness Guy Pearce say the word ficus. Which, in my mind, is a legendary word in that movie. It's great.
Stop multiplying.
It occurs to me, Tony Stark is the Val Kilmer quipster in these movies, where he was sort of the couldn't quite keep up guy in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yes.
Just, yeah, nice. He can play both sides of that. Anyway, blah, blah, blah.
If only.
So we have this one night stand with a girl who knows how to make explodey plants. So December 2012.
As you do.
Yeah. It's been quite a time after the event, by the way. This is the plot synopsis from IMDb. I'm sorry for any kind of strange sidetracks I take. Yeah. So it's been quite some time after the events of New York City and the Avengers Initiative from the Avengers when Iron Man, Tony Stark saved New York. Arguably, they all saved New York, but... a haunted Tony Stark has obsessively built several Iron Man suits in his mansion. He's working on a new model, the Mark 42, which is modular, so all the suit pieces fly to him and recombine. I don't like this idea. It's a gag. I mean, I guess I would like the idea, but the fact that the whole thing is a gag during the whole movie is weird. Like, I'm not sure. It's almost
just a big running dick joke.
Kinda. And if the whole movie was gaggy, that's not a good word, the I don't know. I mean, again, we don't want these movies to be super serious.
This movie is just exceedingly silly. And I think the more times you watch it, the more you realize how just silly it is from top to bottom. Even though there's like, because when you first watch it, the Mandarin seems like so serious and, you know, a global terrorist threat. It's pretty heavy for a kid's movie.
Except that he's Billy Bob Bin Laden. I love the Mandarin's accent in his terror videos.
Yeah, but yeah, after watching it a few times, like from start to finish, this movie is super goofy. And when it's sort of pseudo serious, it's all superficial. It's goofy even then.
Okay, so at no time should we take any of this as serious.
No. And who knows? Tony's an unreliable narrator.
True. Yeah. It's brought up now it's kind of a running joke that all Shane Black movies are Christmas movies, but sure enough, this is a Christmas movie. And Tony is dancing around to a funk version of Jingle Bells. And he and Jarvis have some funny repartee. And then it talks about how he turned on this TV to find a new terrorist at work called the Mandarin, played by Ben Kingsley. And again, it is like Hillbilly Bin Laden. And he's ruthless. And it's actually, I thought this Mandarin and then the turn that it takes is the best part of this movie.
It absolutely is. I mean, if so what the Marvel movies are really good at are taking concepts from, like, favorite concepts from the comic books and really updating them. Like, there is a huge crossover event in the comic books called Civil War. So they took that concept into the movies. And it's not at all the same thing, but it's sort of the same themes that run through it. And they figured out a way to pull it off in the universe of the movies. So, yeah, on the surface, they did the exact same thing with the Mandarin. They took this super racist character and they kind of updated him and changed him to something a little bit more modern, more grounded in reality. He doesn't have these magic 10 rings. But yeah, then they pull that rug out from under you. It's great. I love it. I love it every time.
And again, the reason why I like the Mandarin in this case is because, yeah, he is an evil bad guy. He's ruthless. Mm-hmm. He's brutal. He doesn't have a ton of screen time, which makes him even more brutal. And so it sets him up as a pretty formidable foe. Because, you know, Johnny Superhero of the Week, Johnny Supervillain of the Week, that I could take or leave. Like, the actual, like, powers of the bad guys in this movie, it's fine. I mean, it's a comic book movie, right? So what do you expect? No better or worse than any of the other villains we've seen in any of these movies. Oh, well, okay. This is my first big tangent, by the way, of the night. The Mandarin hijacks America's airwaves and makes this whole taking credit for bombing of the U.S. military station in Kuwait, killing wives and children of the soldiers who were out of maneuvers, and blah, blah, blah. Now,
hijacking.
Except, okay, I don't know. Did you guys follow any of the post January 6th, pre January 20th, like QAnon talk?
Yes.
Okay. Because one of the big things we were to expect, not we, I'm not part of that group, obviously, but one of the things that was going to happen, first of all, Joe Biden and all of the Democratic members of Congress were going to be arrested any moment. It was all, mm-hmm. it's all part of the plan, man. You got to trust the plan. The other thing was he would have activated the emergency broadcast network and then there would be a major blackout. Okay. Now, I don't know about you, but the emergency broadcast network, it's not like a powerful tool. It's an interesting way to get information across in a hurry, but all, I mean, you actually Yeah. Anyway. So,
yeah, if you don't want to listen to it, it's pretty easy just to turn it off.
Well, exactly. And it just interrupts things briefly. Yeah, it's not. I mean, and maybe, I don't think it's
necessary. Maybe they were going to have their brainwaves manipulated by secret signals that were coming through ultrasonic frequencies they couldn't hear, but would change their brain patterns.
That's the beauty of QAnon, is all of that is part of the thing, because any fringe thing gets grouped into QAnon. And the
they were going to use the emergency broadcast signal to activate all the nanotechnology that was injected into people who got the vaccine.
The other theory that I heard today was that that the United States was just sold to a giant corporation, and Trump had to leave the office so he can take charge of the corporation, and that Biden is taking the reins only so he can pass ownership of the corporation soon.
Nice.
Well, that one actually makes sense.
Again, though, that's 4D chess. That's the kind of 4D chess that Trump has played with us the whole time. And we're merely playing checkers.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, so this again, recurring theme of somebody taking over all of the airwaves in America, or the world in the case of Wonder Woman.
To be fair, this movie was first.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But, yeah, anyway. The president, President Ellis, played by William Sadler, who we know from among a ton of stuff, The Shawshank Redemption, The Green Mile, and Die Hard 2. Plus, apparently, he's the president in a lot of Marvel properties.
He's also Death in the Bill and Ted series.
Huh? Oh, Death.
It's also Death.
Here, I'm making a hearing impaired joke. I apologize to all the hearing impaired people who are listening to our audio program. So, let's see. Yeah, his initial response makes him the butt of jokes by late night talk show hosts, which, of course, you know, that way we can shoehorn Bill Maher into this whole thing. And Joan Rivers, rest in peace.
That was jarring.
Yeah. So the only thing he's able to come up with is to take the MK8, the suit worn by Colonel James Rhodes, Don Cheadle, and formerly known as War Machine, and have it repainted, rebranded, and reintroduced as the Iron Patriot. Now, is the Iron Patriot a real thing in the comics?
I don't know. Probably.
Bizarre. By the way, I was at first, I'm like, man, Don Cheadle is not the actor to play this character. Like, maybe we did need a Terrence Howard type. You know, somebody with a little bit of bulk to him. But as it turns out, by the end, I like what they did with him, like, action-wise.
Yeah, I don't know that Terrence Howard would ever have been able to pull off being the butt of the joke.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. And Donald Cheadle's a good actor, so it's, you know, he does fine. But like I said, I think I was looking at his skinny arms. I'm thinking, I don't know any military.
He's in a powered suit. Why do you need? Why do your arms matter?
Well, I know, and he's a pilot, so it's not like, you know. He's anyway.
This is the best roadie movie because he actually gets stuff to do in this movie.
Yeah,
eventually,
and shows him having real skills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And War Machine rocks. Makes me laugh every time.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, again, that's the jokey stuff that's fun. For sure.
Mm-hmm.
So Tony and Rhodes are in a restaurant and they're talking about what's really going on with the Mandarin. And Rhodes tells Tony that while the media and the press only know of 3 bombings, there have been at least 6 more that have been taking place off the books. And Rhodes talks about how he's now operating his suit as Iron Patriot. And they're talking about, again, this is the Shane Black thing of they're talking about how the name is dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, fine. I mean, again, it's good. And some kids want his autograph. And, of course, Tony gets to talk about Ralphie from The Christmas Story, which is, of course, fun. But then we have Tony Stark being confronted by a girl that asks him how he got out of the wormhole. And that's when we figure out that that's what his PTSD is all about. That's why he hasn't slept in weeks or whatever, because he is having PTSD from his wormhole adventure, which you could see happening. I mean, again, that's an interesting concept.
That was so subtle, I almost missed it.
Yeah, exactly. It none of this movie is subtle, but certainly his having a panic attack and immediately jumping right out of it and stuff is kind of fun. Again, it's just sort of slapstick humory, but it moves along. I mean, that's the thing about this movie, by the way. I was not bored during this movie. This movie moved along just fine.
Really? I felt like this movie dragged. It was so difficult to watch. I just wanted it to get to the end.
Remind me, I have Mom's instant reaction she just sent a couple minutes ago.
Very good.
So anyway, we get Tony freaking out, and he jumps in the Iron Man suit, and that's where Jarvis says he's suffering from a panic attack. And then we go and are reintroduced to Pepper Potts, Gwyneth Paltrow, and she has a meeting at 4 o'clock with, of course, Aldrich Killian, who has improved his physical condition. By the way, we have this whole thing about Happy being the head of security at Stark Industries. And again, he is a sort of a comic relief character until he becomes a tragic character.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I guess, fun. Apparently, Jon Favreau declined to direct this movie because he was directing something else.
Jungle Book, maybe?
Something like that, yeah.
And, or was this like Chef?
No, I don't know. Something in there. But he said it actually he appreciated A, that he thought Shane Black did a fine job, and B, he thought it was fun just to have more fun in his role as an actor than having to be responsible for everything.
He seemed like he was having fun until he spent the last 90 minutes in the hospital.
Yeah, but you know, that's what you do if you really can only be on the set for a couple days.
That's
so
true.
Yeah.
So Jon Favreau said in December 2010 that he would not direct Iron Man 3, opting to direct Magic Kingdom instead.
Magic Kingdom, a movie I don't even remember.
What is Magic Kingdom?
He remained an executive producer of director Joss Whedon's crossover film, The Avengers, and also served as the executive producer of Iron Man 3.
Yeah, I think Jon Favreau's doing fine. We don't need to worry about sending him canned goods or anything.
He's got Mandalorian money now.
Now we have the Pepper Killian drama, kind of. Although, again, it was supposed to be like a love triangle kind of thing, I think, but it didn't really work like that. But it was interesting to see how Pepper Potts told him that his biological experiment called Extremis, which harnesses the brain power to alter human DNA, and he had this whole three-ball projection system, which is all very impressive. And she immediately shoots him down, saying it's unethical.
Yeah, the whole Extremis thing, the first time I watched the movie, I think is what sank it for me. Like, it was so incomprehensible, the plot, trying to figure out what was going on. But after I'd seen it once and I knew what I had to pay attention to, what I didn't have to pay attention to, that's when I could really relax and enjoy just the... It really is a constant barrage of jokes in this movie. That I think you miss a lot of them, or you don't have time to appreciate them if you're actually trying to figure out what the fuck they're talking about.
Yeah, maybe. So Jason, we got to watch it all again.
Yes, maybe two or three more times.
Okay. And
I'll
then
put it on my list.
And then it's Suspiria.
More likely I'll watch that.
So question for you, actually for both of you, I suppose, since, you know, anyway, when Pepper drives home and sees Tony's Christmas gift to her, did you think the bunny's hands were boobs?
They look like boobs.
I thought they were boobs until later when they saw they had like weird stripes on the inside. And I realized, well, they're not boobs, I guess. They must be hands, but they're the most boob looking hands forever. Jason, did you not think it was a big boobed bunny? Giant jug jackrabbit?
I didn't even notice.
That tracks.
Yeah.
Like, when he first was talking about the rabbit, I thought he was referring to a sex toy. So
there is a sex toy thing in this movie at the very end. Well, we'll get to it. Okay. So we have this whole thing where Pepper comes home and she's greeted by Tony in the suit, but it's not really Tony because Tony's downstairs because the suit works on remote control. Again, not a huge fan of the suit, but oh well, whatever. He experiences a PTS dream, and one of his, I guess, his suit is possibly trying to kill Pepper.
Sure seemed like it.
So she gets asleep in the other room because she's not having it. And he says, yeah, he's been a mess since the whole thing in New York. He's a wreck.
Is Gwyneth Paltrow good in this movie?
I don't blame her. I want to blame her. I don't blame her. There was a stated goal to make Pepper not a damsel in this movie. And they failed.
They failed, yeah.
Because, yeah, again, at the end has some problems. But the fact that she gets to jump in the suit and then to kick some ass at certain points in the movie, you know, that's kind of fun.
I appreciated that the suit moved completely differently when she was in it versus when Tony was in it. That's a nice touch. But, yeah, I can't tell if she's good or not because I have just such a deep-seated unlike for her anytime I see her on screen. I mean, she's like strictly in Gina Davis territory for me. But I just can't figure out if she's good or not or if she has any triumphant moments or not because every time they have her try and do anything, it just makes me roll my eyes.
Well, for me, it's different, obviously, because I have a different relationship with Gina Davis. But also, I never have to worry about coming home and like being like, what's that smell? Did you light another Gina Davis vagina candle? And with Gwyneth Paltrow, there's always a chance because she sells Gwyneth Paltrow vagina candles. Look it up.
I don't think I will, but thank you.
Yeah.
Magic is it really specific to her or is it just like general?
I hope it's just general.
Magic Kingdom never got made.
Oh, okay. Well, again, that's egg on his face then. He should have directed the hell out of Iron Man 3.
It was apparently it has something to do with Disney. So,
That would explain the name.
Something about the park. So anyway, I don't know. It's very confusing. There's whole bunches of people who are all excited about it. Who had been excited about it and then got progressively pissed that it was just dragging on and then pissed that it just died. So the long gestating Tomorrowland film.
Tomorrowland. Oh, what was
that? That got made.
Brad Bird and George Clooney in 2015.
Oh, okay. Actually, this would be a good place. I'm going to pause for just a second. Talk amongst yourselves. Talk Disney, whatever. Jon Favreau, the other Jon Favreau, whatever.
The other Jon Favreau? There's more than one.
Political commentator?
I got nothing. Got nothing.
So you didn't like any of the quippiness in this movie?
I had a hard time enjoying the quippiness around all the crap.
There's so many subtle things that I love. Like when the Maya character shows up at the house and you know, there's the awkward moment when Pepper realizes that she had a one-night stand with Tony and he's trying to diffuse it by being, you know, funny and charming. And he makes a comment about how, you know, it was one special night for both of them. And then she just kind of gives Pepper a look like, not really. It's very funny. Very subtle. There's tons of stuff like that in this movie that I love.
Yeah, I think that didn't make up for the rest of the movie. I think that was my problem. Is the rest of the movie wasn't good enough to make up for that. Or that wasn't good enough to make up for the rest of the movie, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I don't know.
I can see that.
Maybe I'll go back and rewatch it. Not right now. But I don't know. We'll see.
Are you guys familiar with a comedian named Jim Norton?
Yes.
Yes.
If Jeremy Renner and Jim Norton had a baby, James Badge Dale, the guy who plays Killian's henchman, would be that guy. He had the I don't like him sort of feeling I have for Jeremy Renner. And the, oh, this guy is a real sicko vibe you get from a Jim Norton. Who, by the way, Jim Norton is hilarious in his sicko-ness.
Mm-hmm.
anyway, so Happy didn't like the look of Killian's dude that was with him. So he starts to, he tails him. And they go to the...
He's not really a very good security guy.
Oh, no.
Happy?
Yeah.
Oh. Oh. So...
he's a promoted driver.
Yeah. They go to the Grauman's Chinese Theater. And that's where we see Eric Saven, who is the, again, Killian's henchman. James Badgedale is the actor. And he gives another man a briefcase. The other man is Jack.
He was great in season 3 of 24, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
He's been in a bunch of TV, I think. He did a fine job. Yeah. But, again.
He was in The Gray. He was great in The Gray.
I know. Yeah. Saven gives this Taggart guy a briefcase. My wife's a
big James Badgedale fan.
Oh, okay. And Happy tries to intercede, but is beaten senseless by Saven. And seconds later, Taggart overheats and explodes, leaving behind only his dog tags.
He failed to regulate.
Yeah. Happy is severely injured, and Saven walks away. That's when you find out that something weird is going on with Saven.
Not why. Yeah. He's also severely injured.
Yeah. Yeah. And he seems to have some sort of like molten core or something.
I kept thinking Warren G when he would say regulate, so
I kept thinking Charlie Sheen.
Two very different directions.
Yes.
Yes.
And then hours later, the Mandarin hijacks the TV airways again to take responsibility for this blast. By the way, this movie has a big death toll. I mean, granted, not as big as New York, but lots of people died in this movie. You know, for a kid's movie. So, Tony is now furious over Happy, who has been left comatose after the bombing. And after visiting the hospital to check on him, and to make sure that all the hospital employees are wearing badges in Happy's rooms in his honor, and also that his TV is always playing Downton Abbey, Tony is mobbed by reporters, and one of them asks him if Tony's going to kill this guy. So Tony decides to just go off and say, if that's what you want, come at me. Here's my address. Come and get it. And then he destroys the reporter's tape recorder and says he's going to bill him. Or to ask to bill him. Sorry. And then says, bill me. But anyway, Tony turns out not to be a nice guy, and he doesn't believe too much in, I guess he's not respectful of the repress. So at home, Tony has Jarvis build a hologram of the destruction at the Chinese Theater, and he discovers that Happy is pointing to the military dog tags with the name Jack Taggart etched in them. And there were no active military personnel at the blast, so Tony wonders exactly what the dog tags are doing there. And then Jarvis analyzes the latest Mandarin attack and compares it to past incidents, and blah, blah, blah. It bears a strong resemblance to an incident that happened 4 years ago in Rose Hill, Tennessee, and predates all of the Mandarin attacks.
You didn't like Detective Stark?
This is fine. I mean, it got you from point A to point B. Didn't last too long. But he is interrupted when the doorbell rings, and he told Jarvis that the house is on lockdown, and turns out to be Dr. Maya Hansen who shows up. And then Pepper has already been angry because of course, the suit trying to kill her earlier. So having a former sex partner show up, although you get that Pepper is probably used to this sort of thing.
So the guy in super technology has suits that fly to him now, but doesn't have a sophisticated enough security system to keep people out of his house or even off his property.
But yeah, he yelled at Jarvis about that.
But and again, okay, hold on. But Jarvis in this case, I thought he was acting like a little bit like what Michael Caine as Alfred in Batman, where all of a sudden he just lets the damsel come right on into the Batcave.
That wasn't Michael Caine.
Was it not Michael Caine? Was it Sir John Gielgud? Yeah. So we get this again. This former fling who wants to tell him that she says Tony's in danger. And then at that point, the house is attacked by three helicopter gunships disguised as news choppers.
attacked. I think you mean obliterated.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the MK-42 suit.
Does the synopsis you're reading off of say they were disguised as news helicopters?
Yeah, that's what it said. I didn't.
That is not accurate at all.
It doesn't seem to be.
They weren't even disguised.
Pay attention if you're going to write a synopsis. Come on. Go back to Dead Calm, please.
So Tony gets the MK-42 suit to cover and protect Pepper. By the way, the sheer amount of internal damage done to these characters. Oh, yeah. I mean, you can forgive that in a Wolverine movie or a Superman movie. But remember, I guess this is a different universe. I'm like, Batman maybe broke his back.
Suits, right? Magically have inertial dampeners in them.
No. I mean, the ones that weren't wearing suits. Tony Stark was flapping from floor to floor, landing on cement.
He had a magic force field.
Yeah, he must have.
Also, it's Mark 42.
Oh, sorry. MK 42. Yeah, sorry. Mark 42. You're right. So then Tony gets, and of course, this running gag with Mark 42 is he's almost never wearing the whole part of it because something always goes wrong. Like, he's got this special suit that can fly to him or whatever, except it's not working. It doesn't work. Yeah, did it ever completely work? I don't think so.
It worked when he threw it on Pepper.
Yes. Although, it's like, okay, he throws it on Pepper, it's fine. I'm not going to throw it on Rhodey, though. He's like, sorry, dude. These suits are only designed for white people. That's not what he says.
Wow.
Anyway. So Tony, they destroy his house. And Tony manages to put on the suit and to destroy two of the three helicopters. But he can't fly. And when the house crumbles into the sea, it takes him with it. And he passes out and he's underwater. And then sometime later, Tony awakens in the suit when Jarvis sets off the low battery alarm. And he's plummeting to the ground and crashes into a snowy forest. Which I thought was kind of fun. He thinks he's in Northern California, but he's not. He's in Rose Hill, Tennessee.
I think the snow was a clue.
Yeah. And then, I guess this is the one part that I thought, well, this is kind of fun with him dragging the suit behind him and trying to break into some place to repair the suit or whatever. But, anyway, I guess it shows that he only has the one suit and himself. He doesn't have anything else. All his toys are gone. He has to rely simply on his wits and this one suit.
And whatever he can steal.
Yes. Well, again, he's one of those Bill Me kind of guys. You know, when you're really rich, stealing has a different kind of thing to it. You're not really stealing if you could afford to pay for it, are you? I don't know. Who knows? Anyway, we're not going to talk about the morals or ethics of Tony Stark. So we have this whole thing where we meet a kid. After he steals a poncho off the cigar store mannequin, which that's one of those touches, the Shane Black touches, I think, which I like. It's fine. So we have this empty house nearby and the Mark 42. And then he gets confronted by a 10-year-old kid with a potato gun. Kid is named Harley Keener, played by Ty Simpkins from all the Insidious movies, Little Children and Jurassic World.
Nice. Nice resume.
So Tony asks Harley for some help after doing this whole W.C. Fields thing where he disses this kid and yet still remains charming. And he refers to himself as the mechanic, like the kid wouldn't know who Tony Stark is. Then Harley finds out that after he asks a million questions, which is what kids do, and causes Tony to have a panic attack that, you know, this guy has problems. We never do meet Harley's parents, do we?
No. I enjoyed that Harley enjoyed just completely fucking with Tony.
Yeah, well, there's that. Because Tony fucks with everybody, so it's nice to have get a little bit of his own medicine. So, back of the remains of Tony's destroyed Malibu mansion, Pepper is searching for any clues to find out whether or not Tony is still alive.
Nope, that's not true either. That is not what happened.
All right, so she's mourning his death. And then she notices an Iron Man helmet that has the little red light blinking saying there's a message on the machine.
Mm-hmm.
So she puts on the helmet and there she gets a message. And then we flash back. We what is it? What is it called?
Cut to.
Yeah, cut to. We cut to Tony working with Harley. And we have this whole thing about bullies at school and his defense weapon, which, you know, will come back in, you know, 49 minutes. And we get Jarvis back online and blah, blah, blah. So Tony investigates the remains of the Mandarin-esque suicide bombing in Tennessee. And Harley tells Tony about the rumors surrounding the attack and that the soldier in question was a guy named Chad Davis. And so they go and visit the memorial site, which looked a little V for Vendetta.
Very much so.
Yeah. Yep. Nice. You know, it's always nice to see, you know, shadows on the wall caused by, you know, the blast destruction or whatever.
It was also a little War of the Worlds-y.
Yep. Yep. Actually, he was in War of the Worlds, too, with Dakota Fanning.
Was he really?
He was really, yes. Who was? Ty Simpkins or whatever.
Hmm. Oh, that's, I haven't seen that since it first came out on video.
I've never seen it. I remember Jason's review of it.
Which is what?
Dakota Fanning just screaming.
I have it queued up. It's in my list of movies to watch here in the near future.
I believe I saw it in the movie theater, if I recall correctly, and it was excruciating.
Well, you know, Tom Cruise is a compelling actor, so maybe he can pull it off. Oh, wait, you've seen it. You know the future.
This is a Spielberg movie too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was not good. And maybe I'm too much of a War of the Worlds purist, but it was not good. It just, anyway. There's like a side quest in the movie with Tim Robbins, which is just just unforgivable. So,
did you hear about the H.G. Wells controversy, War of the Worlds controversy, just this last week?
No.
Yes.
Yes, you did. It's great.
I did.
So they, the UK has an H.G. Wells coin, and the memorial coin. 75 years since his death.
So they hired an artist to create a coin,
yes,
in tribute of H.G. Wells.
Yep. Who died 75 years ago. And so one of his most famous things was War of the Worlds. And one of the most famous parts of War of the Worlds is the ships of the Martians. Do you remember what the ships of the Martians look like or were called?
I remember tripod looking things.
Yes. They were very specifically tripods, except this artist made a tripod with four legs. So, you know, you can't win them all. It does have a tribute to the Invisible Man here, too.
The more embarrassing part to that was, rather than owning up to the fact that maybe they fucked up, they attempted to cover with it. Well, it was an artistic interpretation and homage.
Yeah.
Like, no.
It's from the country that brought us Bodie McBoatface, right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, and they brought us our country. So, you know, there's that. Anyway, so then we go to the bar, and that's where we meet Chad Davis's mom, played by Dale Dickey, who, let me tell you,
Wait a second. I gotta back up.
Okay.
You can't call it a tripod if it has four legs.
Well, exactly. Yes. Yes. Quad pod.
Yes.
And it so was then so he's
calling it a tripod.
Every single rendition of the whole thing has the tripod like movement. That's yes. Part of the scary bits of it.
Yep.
That's amazing.
Anyway.
I think this artist had just watched, like, Mars Attacks.
Maybe, yes.
Attack.
That's what it says on the side of the coin. Anyway, so back to Dale Dickey. Dale Dickey is a character actor. She is great because she looks like every character from a Rob Zombie movie. we know her from Super 8 and Domino. Anyway, she's great. So, she definitely pulls off the beaten down alcoholic mother of a guy who killed himself and lots of other people. Anyway, so he brought the file and, she brought the file to meet with somebody else, but Tony shows up and starts to chat with her and she sees the file and he flips through it, even though he knows he's taking advantage of this woman. And that's where we meet.
But that's what he does.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly. Yeah. Then we meet Ellen Brandt, who is played by Stephanie, Sostak from The Devil Wears Prada. And she shows up and cuffs Tony, and pretends to be a Homeland Security officer, but she is fooling no one, especially the sheriff who's there at the bar as well. So then we have a nice fight scene involving her. And then of course our Jim Norton guy and, there's a bunch of microwave stuff going on, and I don't know. I mean, it's a fine fight scene.
Microwave, you know, had a light bulb and turned it on some gas and splody splody.
That's scary shit. Don't tell. You can't tell me otherwise.
I didn't like this action scene as much as I like the house destruction scene. I thought it dragged on a little too long. But it does get me to one of my favorite parts of the movie, which is the goodbye scene between Harley and Tony.
He's driving away in the car. Trying to guilt trip him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, it's great. It is.
They have good chemistry.
They do have good chemistry. It's fun. It actually is a fun bit of business.
Not unlike a scene in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang where Gabe Perry is trying to get away from Harry, who's leaning up against the car.
Oh, well.
If it ain't broke.
By the way, another bit of kismet. So you know who else was a child actor that came into a show that's been on a long time in order to like refresh it a little bit? One Danielle Brisbois. Stephanie, Archie Bunker's granddaughter. Also, co-member or co-songwriter of one Greg Alexander of the New Radicals, who reformed or reunited to do the inauguration. Which, by the way, I did not see any of the inauguration, so I didn't see if they did actually perform. I imagine they did.
It's lots of it. I did not see them.
It's a weird song. I mean, I guess it was like Bo Biden's favorite song or something. But it's a weird song in 2021, especially the end part where he wants to punch Marilyn Manson in the face. But whatever. Again, Greg Alexander.
I enjoy that song.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Dennis Miller's radio theme song, right?
Yes. His
conservative radio program, yeah.
Yes. Is that still even in existence?
I can only imagine it is. Why wouldn't it be?
Nah, I can't. I don't know.
And maybe it's a podcast now.
Well, he did it from home anyway. Oh, he recorded it from like his kitchen anyway when he had, so.
Yeah. Well, you know, of course he can do it from home. What would you expect, cha-cha? Anyway. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, so they part company. And while he's driving, the Mandarin hijacks the airwaves once more and explains he's going to brutally murder the CEO of a major oil company on live television if the president doesn't call him within 30 seconds or a minute, right? Something like that. The phone number is in the president's phone. So the president tries to call, but the Mandarin doesn't even answer the phone. He just shoots the guy anyway.
It's like the Roxxon oil company, company.
Yes, Roxxon. Yeah.
War Machine Rocks.
Oh my God, no! And it was the boat at the end was the Roxxon Norco that was supposed to substitute for the Exxon Valdez.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Dennis Miller Show, the conservative American comedy and talk radio show on Westwood One from 2007 to 2015.
He's been off the air for 6 years.
Mm.
Holy cow! Well, you win. I defer to your expertise.
The Dennis Miller Show aired at different times at various locations with Miller broadcasting out of his home in Santa Barbara.
Well, yeah. That's how syndication works. It's a weird way to describe it.
The radio show also featured a website with additional material for paid subscribers. The additional website material included a message board, merchandise, video clips of Dennis answering viewers' questions in a segment which he called the Bathrobe Sessions.
That's early Patreon. By the way, that's why we don't have a Patreon site, because I don't want to do bathrobe sessions.
I think you're thinking of OnlyFans.
Well, yeah, either, really. It's very nice. So, blah, blah, blah. So Tony calls Rhodes, and he's managed to locate what they think is the Mandarin. And Rhodes takes his suit to the Middle East, where he's shocked to find nothing. It's sort of comic until it's not.
You're all free if you weren't before.
Yeah, it's very strange. And then Rhodes gets disabled, and they drag Rhodes off in his Iron Man, his Iron Patriot suit.
I hate all of that. I hate all of the weird, unexplained, no rules to it, extremis powers.
Yeah.
Hate it. Yep. All of it.
I agree. Oh, by the way, yeah, this is where, by the way, we get Tony getting Rhodey's log on to the secret databases so he can do his snooping around. And that's where he goes to a beauty pageant and goes into one of the camera crew vans. And he meets his biggest fan, the guy with the tattoo on his arm, which is sort of funny. What did he call him? Scott Baio. What was the quote? Anyway, so. Beep.
Again, it's one of those throwaway lines. I really hope it was an improv, but he says he describes how the tattoo isn't a very accurate rendering because it's based on a doll he made, not yes, a photograph.
Exactly, which is awesome. Yeah.
If anybody's ever seen the ABC series that only had a couple seasons, Happy Endings, they'll recognize the actor played Max.
Oh, so excellent.
By the way, Happy Endings is hilariously funny, and I recommend it.
Okay.
Wife and I just started watching that show a few months ago. It's like a pandemic watch. It is lovely and hilarious.
It is very hilarious. You will, if you rewatch it at some point, you will get even more out of it because it is deeply hilarious. So, are you watching it on Hulu?
Yes.
Okay. The unfortunate thing about Hulu is it doesn't play them in order.
Oh, yeah, we noticed. We noticed the order is completely jacked up.
Yeah.
But Damon Wayans Jr. is very, very funny.
They're all, I mean, yeah, I was really sad when it went off the air. It was a great show.
So back to Extremis. This is where Tony figures out what Extremis is all about. Extremis is this thing where you get injected by the Extremis juice and, it allows you to, fix your boo-boos, including, missing limbs and whatnot. However, if you can't properly metabolize it, your body heats to an extreme temperature and explodes.
But you also have magical melty powers.
Yeah, you got the power of heat.
Well, also the power when you touch an Iron Man suit, it just completely disables it.
There's that. Well, he just grabbed the arc reactor, right? Is that not part of
the arc reactor is in his chest.
The thing is just the thing in the Iron Man suit itself is just a decoration, like a logo, yeah. Like an emblem, like a hood ornament. A number of early subjects were killed because of the flaws in the Extremis program, which accounts for all the blow 'em ups. So, blah blah blah. Tony thinks he finds where the place where the Mandarin has been hijacking the airwaves from in Miami, Florida. So he runs down there and he sneaks in with the potato gun and this Dora the Explorer watch. And this is where we meet Trevor Slattery.
It's my favorite part of the movie.
It may be the favorite part of any movie I've seen in 2021.
I don't recommend anybody going in there for the next 20 minutes.
Oh, and again, to me, he has like the total Ringo Starr accent.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that he's just like, so he's an actor. He's an actor hired to play a role. He is basically being paid in drugs and girls
and a kind of speedboat.
Yeah, the speedboat. Yeah. And so it's great. And it allows Ben Kingsley to do some funny fucking Ben Kingsley stuff. He is
so funny when he just slips back into the Mandarin to prove that he can do it.
It's great. And he keeps nodding out, you know, which is funny.
There's a whole short movie they used to call them Marvel One-Shots.
Uh-huh.
That is just him. It's about him.
This is where you find out that Killian is the Mandarin, that it's all just a cover-up. The Mandarin bombings are really all just shit that happened because of the extremist failures. So Slattery manages to tell both Tony and Rose that he's a Mandarin, and manages to completely annoy them both. And Rose stays behind to get information from Slattery, while Tony's going after to confront Killian. And Tony is captured by some of Killian's henchmen, who are also extremist experiments. And Maya reveals she's been working for Killian all along.
No, they're not. No, they are not. The guys who are guarding him when he's strapped to the bed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're right. No, those guys aren't. Yeah, in fact, the one who bails, the one who said, "Hey, these guys suck," I think he is actually Robert Downey Jr.'s like martial arts coach or teacher, sensei, whatever. Sifu.
Nice.
It's good to get in the movies that way. Probably got a second.
Is what, a capoeira teacher?
Something like that, yeah. So we find out that that Maya has been working with Killian all along, and she thinks that Tony can perfect the extremist DNA and Alder drives, and reveals he's kidnapped Pepper, and he injected her with extremists, intending to infuse her with superhuman abilities to turn her against Tony as a leverage to gain Tony's aid in fixing extremist's flaws. Now, is that what he really wants to do, or does he just do it just to fuck with Tony?
Unclear.
Yeah. Okay.
Doesn't. And then never explained. Doesn't matter.
And this is where Maya, who could have, again, she could have been a good villain, but she only gets to be a villain for like 5 minutes or even less, because then she immediately says, "Don't do it, Aldridge, or I will kill myself." And he says, "Nope," and shoots her.
Yeah, real low point for this movie.
Anyway, so Tony is strapped to a bed frame, and he escapes by summoning the Mark 42 suit from Tennessee piece by piece again. By this time, I'm growing real tired of the Mark 42. I mean, again, the gags are funny at first, but it's like, come on.
The next time, though, the final time that they do it, it's funny again.
Yeah, well, nah, I don't know. I don't know about that. We have, of course, the president's been threatened, so the president goes into Air Force One, and the vice president is going to be man in the home during the holidays or whatever, blah, blah, blah. We have the Iron Patriot goes aboard to protect the president, but of course, it's not Rodian's eye, but it's Savin. And he takes the president and then blows holes in the airliner, and the survivors all fall out. This is a little scene where Iron Man shows, Tony shows up with his Mark 42 that's not completely working great, and blah, blah, blah. And this is where we have the action set piece where he saves the 12 people or whatever, even though he can only hold 6 of them. Except he's going to electrify their hands or something. I don't know how this is all going to work out, but it worked out fine.
Sounds perfectly reasonable.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're trying to accomplish with that scene, by the way.
Just cool action scene.
Just didn't need it.
No, oh no, not at all. Yeah. I mean, the only payoff to the whole scene is that he saved the people, and then immediately when he lands on the bridge, he gets hit by a truck and exploded to a million pieces. That's when we find out that Tony's still back at the Killian's ranch or whatever. Mansion.
On the boat, right?
Oh, is he still on the boat? Okay, I don't know where they are at this point. Yeah, they must be, because they took Slattery's boat, his speedboat. Trevor's speedboat, sorry.
Yeah. This is about the time when I start to turn on the movie.
Yeah, well, that's it. Is that now we have this whole big action set piece that's coming up, where we have the Iron Patriot suit with the president being flown away. Tony and Rose trace Aldrich to an impounded oil drilling platform where Aldrich intends to kill Ellis on live television. The vice president will become the puppet leader following Aldrich's orders in exchange for Extremis to cure his little girl's disability. Yes.
If it doesn't explode her.
Yeah. And I mean, at this point, I felt kind of sad for Jose Ferrer, who plays the vice president. Miguel Ferrer. Sorry.
I was going to say.
Yeah. Jose was his father.
That's a different dude.
I don't know.
Who one will recognize as Albert from Twin Peaks.
He's always a dude from RoboCop for me.
Yeah, he's got the great voice. This is where, again, this is where you have the big, huge action set piece and it all gets super goofy. And there's all this sort of peril going on, but you know none of it's going to really... I mean, you know how it's going to end. That's the problem. There's no stakes.
I was really hopeful for a couple seconds and then realized it wasn't going to happen.
Except at the very end, I swear there's some sort of like metallic vibrator that falls down and Gwyneth Paltrow kicks it or uses his whatever the Iron Man
force weapon.
Yeah. To kill Aldrich.
Hmm. Yeah, it's one of his arm missiles.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Sure.
Is that what they call it?
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. It's very handy. But, okay, so...
Yeah, handy.
So...
the thing.
So we have this whole thing where the president is strung up, sort of almost crucifixion style kind of thing. And we've got Tony and Rhodey, who don't have any Iron Man suits, that are going in to try to rescue everybody. You got Pepper, who's in peril, who's going to blow up because of the Extremis thing. And you've got the bad guy who can do the melty shit.
The only fun part of this whole like last 30 minutes is seeing how competent Rhodey is.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, Rhodey can shoot. Rhodey can fight. Rhodey is super competent. Yeah, he pulled it out for me. Like I said, at the beginning, I'm like, yeah, he just doesn't look the part. But at the end, he acted the part. It's great. That's all I want.
Really. He pulled it out for you?
He pulled it out for me, yes. Yep.
Just like Pepper did,
yeah.
Really hands-on.
And then, of course, we have House Party Protocol, where underneath the rubble of Stark Manor, whatever.
Magically cleared out just in time.
Yes. Yeah, because why couldn't he have enacted the House Party Protocol, I don't know, 45 minutes ago in the movie? Where we have all the Iron Man suits. There must be dozens of them.
Well, probably about 42.
Oh, okay. Well, fine. Well, that is dozens, so there you go. Anyway, so yeah, so we have all these suits. It's, again, like I said, it would have looked great in the theater because you've got the whole screen being taken up by all these Iron Man suits going along. And then you have the bazillion extremist sort of red shirts, basically. And you have jumping and running and flipping and whatever. And because the Mark 42 never works right, Tony has to do all this impressive stuff, which is, again, it's fine, I suppose. But also, I don't like what they did with Pepper. Because Pepper's got this extremist stuff, so she might blow up any minute. And yet... I never really thought she was in any kind of peril at all.
I was hoping.
Never thought she was actually dead, of course.
No.
And then at the end, they actually just fixed her off screen. Oh, I'll take care of that. I'm a genius. I'll solve that problem.
Also, when she killed Killian, I don't know. I didn't feel any moment of triumph.
No. No, and she's all shocked that you had the capability of harming people. She hasn't been against harming people, has she? I mean, she is, it turns out to be a better leader of a corporation than Tony was. She's not like his heart or anything, or his humanity, his conscience. And then we got the most disappointing part of this movie for me, because I don't understand. I assume, is there another Iron Man movie?
No.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It's like, so he does Operation, or sorry, the Clean Slate Protocol, which destroys all the Iron Man suits.
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically, or at least all the ones in the sky. Boom. It goes off like fireworks. It's all very patriotic. Saves the president, blah, blah, blah. He gets to get into his new Audi. And he leaves Harley with a nice little lab, a nice present from the mechanic. And this is, again, where he gets in his car, talking about demons or whatever. And
well, this is after he gets his heart repaired, right?
The yeah, exactly. Yeah, he goes in and fix everything.
Yep.
Yeah. So he no longer needs the arc reactor. He doesn't have to be Iron Man anymore.
He does not.
No. That's why he is. Yeah, that's why he should. At the end of the movie, he should be sitting in the car saying, I am Tony Stark.
Yes.
That's great. That's a great way to end. I mean, again, it doesn't forgive the rest of the sins of this movie, which, by the way, I like this movie. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, still, it's weird that I guess he's. I guess you could massage into saying, no, he's Iron Man. He's always going to be Iron Man, whether he has a suit or not. Does the man make the suit, or does the suit make the man? That's the question. That's the psychological question. Philosophical question. Sorry. It's a philosophical question this movie asks. But I really like the post-credit scene.
With Bruce Banner?
Yeah. I'm not that kind of doctor. It's very funny. I liked it. It didn't give away any details. I think this is the first movie that didn't give away some sort of plot point from a future movie.
Yeah.
Brother Jay, notes?
We've already discussed all of my notes. But I give you kudos for Billy Bob Bin Laden.
Thank you. Drew, any more notes? Any thoughts? Any hopes, dreams, wishes, ambitions, frustrations, likes, dislikes?
This is a troubled movie, but it is a fun rewatch. Because you can turn off the parts that don't make sense. You can be doing laundry or start looking at your phone or just skip it. But there are so many parts of this movie that I really enjoy. And it's all the little stuff. It's all the Shane Blackie stuff. And yeah, Ben Kingsley, he is such a treat.
So, because this has already become a theme. So are the rest of the movies pretty much like this, where like three quarters of the movies are okay, but then you should just leave the last quarter of the movie from even being watched?
Well, no, there's a movie coming up real soon that's just real bad from start to finish.
Isn't it coming up next?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so too.
So this does sort of cement a running theme where for all of the modern age stories, most of the shit that happens is Tony Stark's fault. So like the first two Iron Man movies, the villains are a direct result of Tony Stark or some shenanigans that his father pulled. Again, in this movie too, he sort of created Killian as a villain just because he was a dick to him. And yeah, there's many more movies coming up where you can trace all the problems back to Tony.
Wow.
A lot of people like to throw this movie away, like just not even consider it part of the overall MCU arc. But it really does set up some significant changes for Tony in future movies. So it sets up some important stuff for him. So I don't think this movie is skippable like the next movie is.
However, we will not skip the next movie. Okay, so here we go. Mother Anderson, we waited for this. As of an hour ago, just watched Iron Man 3. Best yet. Loved Ben Kingsley doing Richard Nixon as the Mandarin, and he was hilarious as the actor. Found the Stark character much more tolerable in this movie, almost likable.
Wow.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, again, with the kid, I think maybe the kid helps humanize Tony.
Mm-hmm. And he spends so much more of this movie outside the armor.
Yeah. Yes.
So you get to see Robert Downey Jr. on full display.
Yep, and he's kind of coming apart. So he's not like perfect, therefore punchable face. He's super flawed in lots of ways. Not just arrogance and stuff. Okay, so Brother Jay.
Mm-hmm.
Give it a grade. Pass judgment.
I'm going to give it a C.
Ooh. Harsh, harsh judgment. Wait till the next movie. Brother Drew, was it worth it?
This movie's worth it. It's worth it just for Ben Kingsley alone. But yeah, there is some good stuff in this movie. It kind of has the same problem as Wonder Woman. You know, the first two thirds, I think, are good, and then it falls apart at the end and really goes off the rails. But yeah, it's worth it for sure. But
the twist that got me, I love that it got me.
Yes.
Like the Ben Kingsley character twist, I loved it. It was perfect. Like, mwah, chef's kiss on that twist.
Yeah. And then remaking him as Tilda Swinton. Just another whole.
Well, again, and what I was thinking about, I'm like, I was even thinking, okay, was that even in the Marvel Cinematic Universe? What the fuck? I don't know. But yeah, I think it's because we have had a discussion before about magic versus technology. And I think that's why I combined the two or conflated the two or whatever it's called. I don't know. I was wrong. I have been wrong before. I shall be wrong in the future. So, on to housekeeping.
Shout out to the dearly departed Hank Aaron, who died today.
Yes. Let's pour one out.
Otherwise, just status quo for me.
And congratulations to President Trump. Sorry, congratulations. Oh, my God. Congratulations what? To President Biden and Vice Holy. President Harris. Whew. And First Lady Dr. Biden and
second dude, Doug.
I didn't get to see any of that drama unfold, but I'm happy it was not as dramatic as, say, I don't know, 2 weeks ago. Yes. Yeah, I'm looking forward to more boring out of our government.
Oh, see, I watched it. I was working, but I had it up.
I appreciated the updates.
So ridiculous. So I have my work laptop, and I was working from home. So two monitors and my work laptop hooked up, but I had my own personal laptop propped up next to me with the inauguration playing, so I could just have it just in background so that I could look at it when I needed to and just be reassured that it was happening and that nobody was going to eat a bullet. So
yeah, it turns out it all worked out.
Yeah. Some interesting choices. Like I said, I'm not sure who Garth Brooks looked like, but he looked like somebody else. he was super puffy and tanned.
He did a couple pandemic specials with his wife, where they were they recorded from like their home studio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean he seems to be enjoying middle age.
Well, he has there's a two episode. I think it's a two episode mini series on Netflix that he did last year. I want to say like I don't know. It was anyway.
Is that called the Chris Gaines Resurrection?
No, it's like
that would be sweet.
It would be. what a bold move. It didn't work, but what a bold move.
Well, it didn't work because Sony didn't make the movie.
Yeah. Still.
Of course you're not going to show. The Road I'm On, Garth Brooks' The Road I'm On. That's on Netflix. I highly recommend it. It's a pretty... it's him and all of his family, including his ex-wife. And kids, and it's a very open kind of discussion about it. The whole beginning to current of Mr. Garth Brooks. A lot of it, though, is well, not a lot of it. he spends probably a good eighth of the the episodes crying, though. So I just warn you. But he's an emotional guy, so
sure.
But no, it's a lot of fascinating kind of backstory, and kind of he talks about the Chris Gaines thing. He talks about you know, his divorce. He talks about Trisha. He talks about all of that. So it's really kind of worth it.
Is this catalog available on iTunes yet? Or, sorry, Apple Music.
I don't know.
Because for a while you couldn't get Garth Brooks' stuff anywhere. Not streaming, and you could buy hard copies of it, maybe.
Well, it's because he had, an exclusive with Walmart for a long time.
Maybe that's it. Well, remember when they were selling his albums at McDonald's?
Yes. Well, yeah.
I mean, again,
I don't know, because I have
can't
all
fault
of it.
The guy.
I own all of his stuff anyway, so.
That's the thing. He was never a musician that I liked his genre, but he seemed like a nice enough guy, and he was certainly entertaining.
Yeah, no, he gives great shows. He's an entertainer. I mean, and he is a fascinating guy when you look at his history, because, you know, being as religious as he is, he was an early supporter of gay rights and gay marriage. He's really kind of a modern, down to earth kind of guy who just happens to have this crazy talent.
Here's another thing, you know, being a country music person. I mean, I don't know whether he even is in country music anymore as far as like the industry part of it. But, like the Dixie Chicks being part of country music, it would be a perfectly understandable career choice not to do the inauguration, just to risk pissing off buyers of your product.
Well, I'm putting words in his mouth. I'm just saying, I think from his perspective, he's all about peace and togetherness. So, anybody who didn't agree with his ability to perform, then they can go get banned. So
he is not on Apple Music, by the way.
No, I had heard some shade being thrown that Lady Gaga appeared to be understandably and maybe reassuringly nervous, like understanding what the event was, and J-Lo came off as a little too polished. Like,
yes.
Oh yeah, I deserve to be here. Move out of the way.
Yeah, I thought Lady Gaga gave a great performance, and I thought that I thought she was genuine. She appeared genuine.
And she didn't throw a lyric of her song into whatever song she sang, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. Jennifer Lopez just seems too. Yeah.
And I'm nothing against Jennifer Lopez.
No, I don't either. But it was an interesting choice that I didn't really appreciate.
Justice for Ashanti.
But the poet laureate was.
Yeah. I amazing. I haven't heard her stuff, but.
You need to go listen to it.
Yeah. Well, you know, two books of hers that are not actually out yet are now number one and two on Amazon.
You need to go listen to the poem, because it's well, I've listened to it many times at this point. So
sweet.
It's very moving and amazing, considering, she's clearly very talented, because at 22, the writing that she emotes through is it's amazing. It really, really was.
Makes you hopeful for the future.
Okay.
I haven't heard the poem. Maybe it's really a downer. I don't know, but.
No, I think
impressive 22-year-olds are a good sign.
Yeah. So, it was good. I watched some of the festivities afterwards. I got kind of irritated at some of it, because it was just the Tom Hanks vamping was just too much for me. So that was kind of like, I'm just tired of that. But And then I was listening to radio, talk radio yesterday, today maybe. I was getting really pissed off at Katie Turr, who kept calling him Joe Biden.
Kept calling who? Instead of Mr. Biden. Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
President Biden would have been fine. Joe Biden is not. Eh. One is respectful, one is not.
Yeah, I don't know. You know what? That office doesn't get the respect it used to.
Well, even if she'd called him Mr. Biden, but just calling him Joe Biden is not appropriate. So,
well, you got to give her a break because she used to date Keith Olbermann.
Uh huh. And then,
ask
of course,
Keith Olbermann, he'll tell you.
Oh, I know. He got her the job. Otherwise, just I'm waiting for snow. It's going to snow here. Whee.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, the weather outside may be frightful, but inside looks delightful. As long as you have no place to go, I say.
I got lots of places to go.
Eric, is your daughter back in school?
She is.
How's that going?
Well, let's see. The first day back at school was supposed to be Tuesday, but we had an ice day because there was like a freezing rain and a crazy amount of ice. And so they made the right decision to postpone that day. But yeah, it seemed to work out fine. I mean, they have like plexiglass dividers between them if they sit at a like desk together. They do a bunch of practices of social distancing. Like the cafeteria food comes to them. They don't go to the cafeteria.
Oh, wow. So they are eating at school.
Oh, yeah. There's a couple. Well, yeah, because they're there from 9 o'clock to 9:30 to 3 o'clock. So
they're there all day.
Yeah. Well, one hour less.
Mine was for 1 hour.
Yeah, wow. It's just 1 hour less instead of it's like 5 hours instead of six or whatever, but or five and a half. Yeah, I mean, and again, there are only a couple of classes are out at recess at the same time instead of like big parts of the school. But I think there's a good amount of kids that are going, so that'll be interesting. It's so far it hasn't, you know, worked. We're only 3 days into it, so if all of a sudden I'm super wheezy, I'm going to be a bit bitter. But you know, maybe in the next couple of weeks I can get a vaccine. I don't know. We'll see. No hurry for sure, apparently.
How's she doing? Is she like exhausted by the end of the day?
Yes, she is. She's excited but exhausted. Yeah. Yep. My only other housekeeping is, so I got my sous vide machine.
Yeah, which one did you buy?
I bought the was it Anova Precision?
Nice.
Yeah. And I bought like a container for the water, and I bought a lid that doesn't fit the Anova Precision because it's bigger than most of them. So I have to like sort of put the lid on weird, but it's okay. It's fine. And in the first, last Friday on the way home from work, I stopped at Fred Meyer and found a couple of discount beef roasts, some pork chops, and a pork loin, and some chicken breasts. And so I did a pork loin in like an hour and a half or something, which is great, wonderful, like a little 1 pound little pork loin. Then I did some carrots for like an hour and a half at like, or 2 hours maybe at like 185 or some crazy temperature like that. That was not worth the time or effort. But then I did two beef roasts for 20 hours, and they were dynamite. They were the best. And I was a little scared, I think. I had them up to like maybe 140 for a while, and then like 138 for the most of it. And I think I would probably go down to like a 135 maybe. But really, really, really good. They were like bottom round roast, so it would have been kind of a tough roast normally, but they were buttery soft and tasty. And then I made some pork chops that I didn't season ahead of time, so they kind of came out bland until you seasoned them, but they were fine, perfectly juicy. And then I had some chicken breast that I think I had a failure with the bag because they came out weird and I didn't like them, and I threw them away.
You said soup, really?
Well, no, because it didn't. The bag didn't. The contents didn't appear to leak into the water. It's just that that something was weird about him, and
so the bag wasn't sealed.
Yeah, maybe not. And so then
you cooked the moisture out.
Maybe that was it. And then also there was like some pink juice, because I took them out and I put them in the fridge. I took them out. I cut them out of the bag and then I put them in like another bag to put in the fridge. And by the next day they had some like pinkish stuff coming out. And so Kelly was really worried that was like undercooked, but I cut open the breast and it was fine. It was perfectly cooked all the way through. It just was a weird consistency and I didn't like it. I'm sorry. You had observations or thoughts about the,
well, I was going to say, so I know a lot of people are squeamish, especially with like red meat, because the temperatures are much, much lower than the recommended, or, you know, the USDA recommends, you know, 165 degrees for beef. Right. Yeah. But because you're having it at a lower temperature for a much longer period of time, it's the same.
That's what I'm learning.
The equivalent.
Yeah.
As far as pork chops, brine them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if it's a quick brine of just a couple hours, brine them. It will be amazing.
Well, that's why the pork loin I got was like pre-seasoned.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great. I mean, again, it was a little bit, probably a little bit saltier than I would like, because it was had its own brine in there, but it was fine. It was great. It was soft and tender for sandwiches. I actually bought a pork loin roast to cook tomorrow, I think. But the pork loin roast isn't going to take 20 hours. It'll take like 6 or 8 hours, maybe tops. Yeah.
A brine you make on your own, even though it will appear to be salty in content, will not make the food salty. So just FYI. And then if you it makes amazing creme brulees, but I also make egg bites with mine.
Have you had jars explode on you?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Cause I hear that's if you over tighten the lids of those jars, they will explode.
So there's a simple technique to not over tighten them.
Which is called not over tightening.
Well, no. So you just start to screw the lid on until you get just a little bit of resistance. And then so you just barely twist it with your hand just beyond that. Okay. So you apply almost no pressure to it. It's because when you heat them up, obviously you want the pressure to be able to come out. But I haven't had any explode. And I've done many, many, many batches. I will say, however, I have been on the opposite end of the spectrum where I haven't sealed jars completely, and that is not desired, because then you end up with, you know, goop in your water. So,
well, that's the thing is that, and there I was reading where, you know, you can buy meat that's like vacuum sealed, right? But people are like, yeah, you don't throw that just right into the water, like the immersion thing, because A, you have no idea how well it's sealed. You have no idea what's in that plastic.
That's right.
And if there's labels on it, you don't want your labels to gum up your immersion thing, because it turns out it's not like delicate, but it's only a few parts. And if you break them, it's done.
Well, if you end up with a whole bunch of sticky, gluey labels all over the heating element, you're going to destroy it.
Yeah, exactly.
Or one of the heat probe sensors, and it's going to renders it not usable. So, just be careful about what plastic bags you use, because people say, use Ziplocs. I'm like, if you're going to use Ziplocs, which I assume
you know Eric's not using Ziplocs.
just make sure you use the freezer style, which are thicker. For sure. Yeah, because the regular ones are way too thin. So
I'm using Food Saver bags because I have a Food Saver vacuum machine thing. So,
and those should be food grade, so those should be fine.
Drew, have you done any sous vide?
I have not.
Because, you know, you've got like a big green egg or its equivalent.
That's a big green egg.
He's got that's a barbecue.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got like a barbecue thing that's an egg-shaped barbecue.
Yeah.
It may not be big green egg branded. One of the big
ceramic ones.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the cool thing about that is, you know, so when you make like a beef roast, I mean, I know you're not so much of a meat guy, but if you make a beef roast, so it comes out. Beautiful. I mean, sorry, it comes out tasty. It does not come out beautiful because it's sort of gray because it doesn't have any sear on it. So you if you throw it in like the hottest pan you can get inside your house. It's great, except it will set off all my smoke alarms and freak out all the pets and stuff. But if you've got a barbecue outside that you can heat that stuff up, it would be worth heating up the barbecue to throw it on real quick to make that happen. Or even like people have done like smoking it after they sous vide it or whatever too. It's a whole other thing. Lower nice. Temperature, obviously. Yeah. So.
Yeah, there's lots of fun stuff. If you go on, because you can make all kinds of crazy stuff in the soup. You can make little cheesecake cups. You can make little cupcake cups. You can.
I thought about the cheesecake stuff, but.
There's tons of stuff.
I was so impressed by the roast beef though. And if you can get like the thing about getting like actually it's Fred Meyer that has been my best bet to find like markdown meat that still looks great, because if they're gonna go right at home into cook them, they're fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with them at all. Unless they're, you know, like I said, if I look at them and if they're weird and green, I'm not buying that meat. But
good advice.
Yeah, but turns out it was the one thing though that was weird is that I had two roasts going at the same time, different seasoning on them, but they're in bags, which doesn't matter, right? So 20 hours seems like a long time. If I'm cooking like a roast or something for 20 hours or anything, if I cook anything for 20 hours, I kind of expect the house to smell like that good smell of something you're cooking.
No. But
because it's underwater in a sealed bag, you're never going to smell it. Yeah. So.
Yeah, well, you either have to keep a lid or you have to get some of the little polycarbonate balls.
I've got a lid, and then, like I said, the part of the lid that doesn't fit, I put some tin foil over and it's fine. Or aluminum foil.
I just bought a bunch of those polycarbonate balls. So,
yeah.
Because I got tired, because I don't have a lid, so.
It turns out that kind of accessory shit is expensive.
Uh-huh.
Like, the whole thing is sort of expensive, but I really like the fact that I have, like, it's a smaller vessel. I think it's only, like, 12 gallons or whatever it is.
Well, and you can use the sous vide. You can use it in pots, too. Yeah. You don't have to use it in
people use, in like, igloo coolers and just use a door drill to make a hole big enough. And
yeah,
just
I wouldn't
pop use, it in there and I, it's an insulated
I wouldn't
vessel.
I wouldn't do that, but...
Why not?
Because the plastic that they use in those coolers is probably not something you want to expose to high heat. That's just my supposition. It's a plastic surface.
I don't know. Again, 130 degrees, who knows? But I don't want to have a failure for sure, because I don't want to have however many, like several gallons of water on my floor either.
But I use mine to temper chocolate.
Yeah.
It's a little more complicated than you would think, because you still have to heat it and cool it and heat it and cool it, but it's way easier to temper chocolate. So
Either of you seen the Robert Rodriguez movie Alita Battle Angel?
No.
There's a fun DVD extra which is like Robert Rodriguez doing like a little mini cooking show where he makes chocolate, and specifically he makes the futuristic looking chocolate bar that they use in the movie.
Oh, that's fun. Is it spicy chocolate? I mean, is it like a non-Mexican
I think he threw some flavors in there.
Oh, okay. What?
Spicy chocolate.
No. I mean, he's Robert Rodriguez is a very proud Mexican American. Maybe he actually is. Anyway, yeah.
So, if you're done, I've got two things I wanted to mention.
Absolutely.
This one thing is, I guess a couple weeks ago now, my wife and I finally finished up Breaking Bad. So I'd seen it all before, and then we were rewatching it for a while, but that's a real hard show to binge. Especially the final season.
I say the first season super easy to binge, but after that it's nearly impossible to binge.
Yeah, and especially the last season. I mean, there's so much fun stuff in that show, but then the last few episodes are rough.
Rough like heavy or rough like bad?
Yeah. No, not very, very good. Probably some of the best TV ever. But
yeah, I think it took me 6 months to finish the last season.
Yeah, and I knew what was coming. So, like, when, you know, when she, like, wasn't super into finishing it, I was like, all right, that's fine. Let's take a break. But we went back to it. And it holds up. It's really good. And then we watched El Camino.
I haven't watched that yet.
It's, yeah, it's not what you think it is, but it's good. And then we've just been cranking through Better Call Saul, which is so good. It is so good. It is so much more fun to watch. I think it might even be a better show.
I think it is.
I know that's blasphemous to a lot of people, but have you seen all of it, Jason?
Mm-mm. I've only seen the first season. I never went back to it.
I think the first season is the weakest.
It's really got some painful parts, though. That's why I kind of put it on the shelf for a while, because all the drama with his brother was really, really, it was way too emotive for me. So
season two is fantastic, and okay. Season three, we're midway through season three, and it's great.
Okay. Well, now that I don't have the crown so anymore, fun. So.
Yeah, so that's the one thing I want to mention.
Breaking, you lost your crown?
Better Call Saul. Better Call Saul is so good. The second thing is, have either of you read the book American Predator?
Who's it by?
Israel Keyes.
Oh, no, I have not. Yes. No.
It's yes. By Maureen Callahan. So, Jason, you've read it?
I want to say I have it on Audible. I want to say so, but let me double check. I'm pretty sure.
Is it good?
Yeah. It's good. It is not. It's not complimentary to APD. It's pretty savage to the prosecutor.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I got this from the library. I'm pretty sure I've listened to this book because I know a lot about. Because is he the one that had the neighbors that turned him in?
No,
I think it's somebody else.
Sort of turned himself in.
Yeah,
I've listened to too many killer books, so.
Yeah, it goes like the first half of the book is dedicated to the Samantha Koenig case, and then it goes into how he was caught, and it's really chilling. Not just the details about what he did to her and other victims, and sort of his whole MO. It's really terrifying, that part.
He's a very creepy guy.
Yeah, he had like, I forget what he called them, like murder stashes all over the country. The probably the most harrowing part of it is it goes into great detail about the legal aspect of it and about how after they arrested him, it was they were really skating on thin ice to have anything to really truly convict him with. It was just by almost dumb luck that he ended up confessing because he thought they had him dead to rights. And if he hadn't confessed, he probably would have gone free.
Well, they never would have found her body, right? Unless he told them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, I mean, again, I haven't read the book, and I think now, and I guess I'm interested in it. But at the time, it was one of those things where it was weird. The whole thing was weird. And it was one of those things that this never happens. Like, this just – it, like, people don't get abducted like this normally. So
vaccines being available to make sure the supply chain
is there.
So now to do this, that's why we have run out of our stock of vaccines, at least temporarily. And that is one of the best things.
Breaking news. Hold on. Did Wonder Woman capture the airways? And is that the emergency broadcast system channel we were expecting all along?
It must be, because my TV just turned on on its own.
That's craziness.
Uh-oh.
It was all very strange and felt small towny.
Yeah, you should read it. I mean, some of the offhanded comments in the book are ones that really got my attention. Like he was actually planning to kidnap somebody from the Huffman area because he thought that was more secluded.
Ah.
but just got a wild hair one night when he was on Tudor. I was like, I want to see if I can make this happen.
Well, and you know, it's one of those things where it was the way the coffee cart was with and the snow.
Yeah,
you couldn't see it from Tudor, so it was weird. It's like not great. And the owner was out of state and all that stuff.
Yeah. I have a couple chapters left. But yeah, it's interesting now that there's some time has elapsed.
It's called American Patriot.
American Predator.
Predator, sorry. I'm not suggesting that he was a patriot. I mean, we don't really know what he was, right?
Gonna go out on a limb and say that not
a patriot. I mean, he was a serial killer, but I mean, because he killed himself, that there goes your ability to answer any more questions, right? I mean, also, did the jail set him up to kill himself? I mean, things where
do we care?
I don't know, not there yet.
Yeah, now we kind of do care.
Why?
Alaska correction system had a bunch of people die, and because they're a system that kind of polices themselves, it's kind of a problem. Get the death penalty. I mean, this guy, of course, yeah, fuck him. I don't care. But, you know, if you're in jail, you shouldn't be, you should very well be treated like a criminal, absolutely. But what you shouldn't be is put in extra harm's way, because that seems like cruel and unusual.
Yeah, I think he is he is the real life Francis Dollarhyde. He's a scary dude.
Yeah, interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. I will add it to my list. How long is it? Is it a long read?
No. Not 9 hours,
10 hours?
Oh, that's nothing. Okay.
Nothing.
Well, I mean, it's not nothing, but yeah, you know, I can knock it out and
not a fun listen though.
Yeah.
Not when you're going to have her with the kids playing in the background.
No.
Yeah, like I was trying to tell my wife about it, like while the kids are around. I was like, okay, that's not happening.
Yeah.
I did finish. I was
like, okay, but do you know what he did after she died? Because
See, I don't know what she did after she died. That's
I finished the HBO I'll Be Gone in the Dark.
Oh, how was that? I've resisted that. Yeah.
It's really good. It's really, I'm glad I watched it. It's really difficult to watch. Especially just knowing the toll that it took on her.
I mean, I'm sure they talked to Patton and stuff, right?
He was in it.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, he was one of the forces.
Patton, like I know him by his first name. It's
there's
Patton
a lot Assault. Of them. I mean, he's you know, I think he's in every episode. He talks very openly about everything. So he's amazingly open in a way that I wouldn't have expected. Because I can, you know, I can't imagine.
I think you got two. You got a choice to make. God forbid, I would never be in that situation. But it's either you're super open about it or you don't want to talk about it with anybody. Both of which are respectable. Selections. I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, he allowed people to have her notes in her laptop, and you know, it was just a. There's a lot.
Oh, he got her book finished.
Yeah.
He didn't write any of it, I don't think, but because she had writing partners or fellow investigators know more than I do.
Now, it's I think it's definitely worth it. It's not light, and it's not something that you couldn't binge it. You probably shouldn't binge it. It took me a long time to finish it. And some of the episodes I actually stopped halfway through. I'm like, I need a break. I'll come back to this in another day. So, but it's really well done. And it is really, I mean, I think it's a really, I think it's a really amazing tribute to her. So
good. I had heard she was on the Dork Forest podcast several times. So I had heard her talk about the whole thing. So that's one of those things where it's like, oh, how wild. And of course, you know, following Patton Oswalt's comedy and stuff, it's like, well, that's very tragic. And then he married Natty Gann, right? So that was all very interesting. But what was I going to say? Oh, Drew, I've watched a couple of sort of, I don't want to oversell them, but some very interesting Korean horror movies that I suspect we'll be talking about in coming weeks, if they remain on the streaming services that I watch them on. So we'll see.
Yeah. One more thing before I forget. Yeah. I keep forgetting to mention this. I kept up with Letterboxd for the second year in a row.
Yeah.
And I have end of year stats for 2020. I watched 177 movies, and I watched 46 specifically for the podcast.
That is crazy. Because I
good for you.
Say, because I don't have the Letterboxd Premium. I just have the regular Letterboxd. And
me too.
Oh, okay, so you're just getting it from the email they send you?
Oh no, I tag the movies.
Oh, okay.
So I tag them with the year I watch, and whether they're for the podcast or not. So then I can just go into my tags list, and it's all there.
Where do I have? Yeah, I got to be better about tags, I guess. Anyway, okay.
But I bet you watch way more Korean horror movies than I did.
Maybe. Shudder is a weird place. Shudder is a good place to find some interesting, like foreign horror films, but I'm not a big fan, and I know why this is a recurring theme of lies, but I'm not a big fan of period pieces. So all those Hammer horror films, I don't like them. Like the whole Victorian era horror, the Gothic horror stuff. Except when I do, I don't like them. So I kind of like, I know Christopher Lee and Christopher Plummer and all the Christophers are great. But nope, I'm good. I'd much rather watch a cheesy Kolchak than a creaky castle horror movie.
So how about The Last Days on Mars?
I like that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You watched it. What?
I watched it before you guys did. Yeah. I liked it a lot. I thought it was, I had the same reaction Drew did. It was like, oh, yeah, Jason has no idea what he's getting into in this movie. Because at first I'm like, oh, man, everybody works with a Kim. And it turns out the more I watched it, the more it's still true, even though it turns out she's the hero of the movie.
I was pretty sure Kim had a whiteboard up somewhere.
Oh, that. Yeah. Yeah.
The station.
But,
yeah, I'm really happy we watched it. I would never have seen that movie otherwise.
No, me either. Thank you, Jason.
Me either.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
It reminded me a little bit of Apollo 18 at the end, but, we can watch that next if you want, Jason.
Apollo 18?
Yeah.
It's your pick next, Eric. You and Jason.
Yeah, we already picked. Reversal of Fortune.
Oh, that's right. I thought you'd already done that.
I don't think we have we?
Better check.
That would be hilarious. Because we would have talked about Alan Dershowitz in 2021, who is different than Alan Dershowitz in 1985.
Oh, my God. Or yeah. You know, you call somebody who's afraid of insulin.
What do you call?
Claustrophobic.
Sonny. Yeah.
That's terrible. Sorry. That's an old joke.
I'm going to laugh if it's like episode 17.
Oh, no. We didn't cover it a long time ago. I will. Fortune. Nope. The only thing where we mentioned for Fortune is in. Hmm. Episode 302, Argo. You guys discuss Ben Affleck's Argo. During housekeeping, they discuss San Francisco, fortune cookie dust, Hamilton, Rocky IV, green buildings, office furniture, and CO detectors.
And what an amazing episode.
Music episode 5, we mentioned Fortunate Son.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the U2 Octum Baby episode.
And we have never talked about reversals that I've put in the notes. I've been kind of lazy about keeping up the site, but I do try to put in notes about what we talked about. And now I'm adding hashtags. Because actually, we might actually get people looking at us on Twitter if I actually throw the hashtags in there. You know, after Twitter, long after Twitter has been relevant. Oh, well, but I refuse to go on TikTok.
You have to make like a TikTok or whatever it is.
Yeah, we don't do that. We could do a Twitch.
No.
I know. The United Nations of Horror, by the way, they do Twitch movies. They've done a couple of them now. And I actually watched...
How did they get away with that?
Because they're all public domain movies.
Oh.
They watched Night of the Living Dead, and they watched, I think... the one I watched with them was... The Last Man on Earth, the Vincent Price I Am Legend movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's great. And then they did... I think they did, like, Santa...
Does Santa he have to kill his Martians? Own dog in that movie?
Does what?
Does he have to kill his own dog in that movie?
Oh, I don't remember. He might. It's a wild movie because I think everybody speaks different languages. And it's all dubbed into English. Like, all the other actors speak Italian. And Vincent Price speaks English, and then that was... Yeah.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow. And maybe ramble, that's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and